Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today, we tackled something a bit different, a source material that's, well, pure digital chaos, really.
Yeah, it's this raw, totally unfiltered stream of consciousness from a very specific internet image board.
Right, one dedicated to Homestuck, that huge, incredibly complex webcomic known for its, you know, deep lore.
Exactly. We're talking about a general board, HSG, probably on a platform like MegaDotion, and it's just this wild mix.
The mix of what, exactly?
You get incredibly detailed fan theories and creations right alongside some pretty extreme political commentary, and even these deep philosophical dives on, like, what comedy even is. It's all just mashed together.
So our mission for you, the listener, is basically to give you a shortcut through all that noise.
Yeah, find those aha moments, help you decode the jargon and the dynamics of this really dug-in online community.
It's definitely a fascinating look at digital subcultures and how maybe serious thought can still happen inside all that chaos. So let's unpack it. Where do we even start? Maybe with just the basics of being there.
Good idea. The sort of digital habitat itself, the infrastructure, the weird anxieties. Well, life on this board, it's kind of defined by this weird operational anxiety. It's all about control, about the flow of content.
Like how?
There's this shared, almost palpable fear of messing up a new thread. They call it espionuring up the thread.
Demurfing up.
Yeah. Or, and this is critical, failing to link back properly to the old thread. It's not just casual posting. It feels really tight, almost ritualistic.
Like they're terrified of breaking the chain of conversation.
Exactly. Because if you break it, you risk losing the history, the context. It shows how much they value that continuity, even in chaos.
Which then leads into their whole discipline thing, right? This odd, almost bureaucratic culture of punishment.
Oh, yeah. It's centered on using bans, but for humor. We found all this discussion about really short ban lengths.
Like the 32-second ban. Tell us about that.
It's just perfectly absurd. It's used as a joke slap on the wrist. But the key thing is, it's apparently governed by the board's software, the VeChun Config.
So they can actually code these tiny little rules in.
Seems like it. Most places give you, you know, 48 hours or a permaban. These guys bothered to set up a ban that's over in half a minute.
What does that even signal?
It's like saying, we take our rules seriously enough to enforce them, but we're also self-aware enough that the punishment itself is a joke. It's pure inside baseball, but enforced by the platform's code.
Huh. So this instability, this need for control, it actually pushes them towards archiving things themselves.
Totally. They see themselves as, like, the last line of defense against stuff just disappearing. Digital history preservation, almost.
And they were actually sharing tools for this,
yeah.
Not just complaining.
Right. Actively sharing ways to find lost media, especially high-res stuff. Stuff from platforms they kind of dismissively call Westoid and Twitter.
Places where artists might try to scrub their old work, maybe?
Exactly. So they list their go-to tools. Sasanow, Tumbex, TBB.org, and of course, the Wayback Machine, web.archive.org.
That list is almost like a little curriculum for, I don't know, digital digging.
It really is. For anyone trying to recover lost online content. And this ties into how they see themselves, too. Their place in the ecosystem.
You mean platform competition?
Yeah, they're very aware of their niche status. There was this one post noting that when 4chan, much bigger platform, suddenly started allowing Homestuck threads again, It basically knocked their own platform down a peg, made it feel not worth checking out. Even if they claim to hate the mainstream, relevance still feels like a competition in these small online spaces.
Okay, so they're obsessed with continuity with their little digital space, but then they also turn inward and have these, like, manifestos about communication itself.
That's where it gets really meta, yeah.
Yeah.
They have this ongoing serious debate about humor. What's real comedy versus what they call destructive irony shittery.
Irony shittery. Wow. They don't mince words.
Not at all. And they take it very seriously. It's not just, oh, I don't find that funny. It's more like an indictment of how people talk online now.
What's the core charge?
There was this one really strong statement. Ironic shielding on the internet and its consequences has been a disaster for the human race.
Whoa. Okay. What's ironic shielding?
The idea seems to be using irony constantly, like a shield. A cynical defense mechanism that stops any real sincere conversation or, you know, vulnerability.
So if they hate that kind of irony, what's their idea of good humor?
Right.
What's funny in a TRVOY free community, as they put it.
Well, the argument kind of goes back to older ideas about comedy, almost philosophical.
Like ancient Greece, you mentioned.
Yeah, one post suggested that the best humor, the real stuff, has to focus on things that offend everyone. They listed things like extreme violence, really offensive sexuality, just crude nonsense.
Why? What's the thinking there?
The idea seems to be that really aggressive, maybe lowbrow humor can actually unite people through like shared transgression, whereas they feel modern online irony just isolates people more because it's all veiled self-protective jabs.
Hmm. That's a really interesting take on humor's function, and it connects to what they said about satire, right? About nuance dying.
Exactly. They argue that bad satire fails because it hammers its point home too, obviously. It just tells you what to think.
Whereas good satire
needs ambiguity. It has to engage you personally, make you wrestle with it, decide on a meaning. If it's just blunt, they say, it's not really working as satire.
Okay, and speaking of bluntness or maybe language fatigue, they had specific linguistic pet peeves, didn't they? Things they really hate hearing online.
Yeah, they had a whole list. They targeted specific patterns that they feel sound like, and I quote, recursively written a Reddit speak.
A Reddit speak. Ouch. What kind of phrases?
Things like the constant repetitive use of chef's kiss or those overly dramatic performative expressions of ironic self-deprecation.
Right.
They see it as lazy, like signaling you're too cool for real thought.
And they had that specific critique about how people structure insults.
Yeah.
The like X and Y thing.
Yes. They hate that template. The example given was smell like self-consciousness and ramen noodles.
Okay. I can kind of see that.
They feel it's an attempt at sounding clever or complex that just lands as totally forced and artificial. They want linguistic originality, even in insults.
And there's that other point about the hecking pupper types. What was that about?
Yeah, that was a critique of online emotional reactions. They observed that some people seem to show way more performative awkwardness about, say, animal cruelty in some meme than they do about actual cruelty towards, like, children.
Mm.
The critique suggests it's a kind of misplaced sentimentality, prioritizing the cute mascot over serious human issues, maybe mistaking that feeling for real moral depth.
Okay, so we've gone from 32-second bans and complaints about Reddit speak to suddenly this incredibly deep, rigorous analysis of Harper Lee's To Kill a Mockingbird. That feels like a massive jump.
It is, but maybe it makes sense. If you spend all your time training yourself to spot bad faith communication, to see through irony shittery, maybe that actually sharpens your skills for doing deep deconstructionist readings of other things, like looking for the hidden agenda in classic literature.
So let's get into that analysis. The core idea is that the book is much more than just a beloved story.
Yeah, the thesis is pretty provocative. They describe the novel flat out as propaganda of the highest order.
Propaganda, wow.
They call it a meta-political intervention, basically disguised as this gentle, nostalgic tale. The argument is that it was specifically built to teach millions of white people to see their own dispossession as an act of nobility.
That's a really strong claim. How do they back that up? What's the mechanism they think is at work?
They focus heavily on the ratio, the structure. They argue its power came from being subtle, from being, quote, 90% story, 10% message.
So the message racial equality was smuggled in.
Kind of, woven so deeply into these compelling, familiar Southern story tropes, the small town, the noble lawyer, the childhood innocence, that it bypassed people's usual critical defenses.
Okay, let's break down the specific narrative techniques they point to. They mentioned character setup.
Right. They highlight four key things they see as evidence of deliberate manipulation. First, the hero, Atticus Finch. He's presented as completely idealized, almost untainted, this upper-class figure of pure virtue.
Which makes being virtuous seem aspirational, maybe?
Yes.
And clean.
Exactly. Second, the character who was accused, Tom Robinson.
Yes.
He's specifically made physically crippled. The analysis argues this minimizes any perceived threat he might pose and maximizes reader sympathy. It frames the reader's response as pity, not, say, fear or wrestling with his agency.
Okay. And points 3 and 4 focus on the accusers, the Ewell family.
Precisely. They are depicted as poor white trash. Ignorant, disreputable, uneducated. The analysis claims this is crucial because it firmly associates racism only with that low social strata.
So educated middle-class readers, the target audience, could easily distance themselves from the problem. That's not us.
That seems to be the argument, that the novel condemns Southern racism, but does it through caricature and by omitting the role of the respectable classes, by framing racism as just a flaw of poor character, not something systemic.
It lets the novel embed this quite radical idea for the time of racial equality within a very conservative-seeming moral framework.
Right. And in doing so, it helps legitimize the civil rights movement, not as this radical break from American tradition, but almost as a fulfillment of its best imagined small-town ideals.
It really is an incredible piece of critical reading, especially considering the source.
Yeah, it shows that really complex thought can bubble up from pretty much anywhere online.
Now, we do have to contextualize this, though. This very high-level literary critique didn't exist in a vacuum on this board.
Absolutely not. That's the defining thing about this source. This analysis sits right alongside a constant stream of pretty extreme political noise.
Right. Often coded, sometimes not. Things like open calls for the destruction of BRICS.
And the documented use of specific terms like Dersite.
And just so you, the listener, understand, we're just reporting what was in the source material here, not endorsing any of it. Dersite, from context, seems to be a known word filter.
Yeah, a way the community uses to talk about certain slurs or prohibited topics without getting flagged by automated moderation. It's part of the jargon again.
Okay, shifting back towards culture, creativity,
mm-hmm.
There was also this strong vein of anxiety about stagnation, wasn't there? Especially in indie games.
Yeah, a real sense that creativity is being stifled by endless recursion. Like, everything is just repeating itself.
They see a paradox, right? Loads of games being made, but...
But it still feels derivative. One poster mentioned the bloat of wholesome 100 games, suggesting that even with quantity, there's a lack of real risk or originality. Everything feels built on safe existing templates.
So what's their advice for creators who want to break out of that? How do you avoid being derivative?
Well, the specific advice they gave was almost like a commandment. If you're an aspiring developer, you should start with an RPG Maker horror game.
Why that specifically?
They called it the only righteous and true first one to take. I think the idea is it's low barrier, it forces you to be self-contained, and it's creatively intense, maybe aggressive, the opposite of the safe, wholesome stuff they dislike.
Huh. Interesting. And meanwhile, that same kind of restless energy gets poured into just incredibly detailed fan creations, like those before and ancestors for Homestuck.
Oh, yeah. Pages and pages dedicated to these non-canon designs and backstories. This isn't just sketching. It's serious, collaborative world building.
Give us an example. Vriska.
Okay, so Vriska, in this fan interpretation, becomes Lamplady Swansong. She's a cerulean blood healer, but she got blinded in some kind of karmic accident related to her powers.
Okay.
So she carries this lamp, ostensibly for her patients, like a symbol of guidance. But because Vriska's canonical luck is just terrible, her patients always end up dying anyway, so she gets this cruel nickname, Swansong.
Wow, this layered. What about Feffery?
Feffery becomes Shepherd Constern. Her formal title is Her Imperilous Consternation. She's depicted as constantly worried about the lower blood castes, her lessers.
And the visual detail.
Her hair is apparently shaped like Glubglub, that giant, terrifying, Cthulhu-like troll deity. And sometimes, random trolls just get accidentally trapped in her hair without her noticing. The level of detail is kind of amazing for fan work.
And Kanaya. The gardener.
Right, the gardener. She tends gardens for the higher castes, and she sculpts topiary. But, and this is the twist, the shapes she sculpts apparently foreshadow unfathomable future events.
So just tending the garden becomes this subtle, maybe terrifying form of prophecy.
Exactly. It takes a simple concept and gives it this huge, ominous weight. It really shows how much originality can still explode within fandom constraints if people push it.
And just to ground us in the moment this stuff was actually being posted, there were references to really current memes and trends too, right?
Totally. Posts mentioning the 2032 meme, someone coining the term Groxy, which sounds like a mashup of a Grok AI chatbot persona and the Homestuck character Roxy.
Groxy. Okay.
And this whole debate about whether they could do a Halloween theme based on another webcomic, The Nameless Game.
What was the debate about? The art style.
Yeah, but specifically about rendering it in the style of another related work, Problem Sleuth. Black and white. Simple. But the reason wasn't aesthetics. It was because it would be easier, lighter to animate the frames.
Pure pragmatism. Efficiency over everything, even for a joke project. Hashtag tag tag outro.
So, yeah. What's the big takeaway here? I think it's that core tension, that really striking juxtaposition we kept seeing.
You mean having that super rigorous, almost academic breakdown of To Kill a Mockingbird?
Right next to jokes about 32-second bans, arguments about irony, and this incredibly detailed fan lore about, you know, fictional troll ancestors with prophetic topiary skills.
It's kind of the reality of how knowledge and conversation work now, isn't it? in these unfiltered digital spaces, everything mashed together.
And this community, for all its chaos, seems to be constantly chasing something they call the Treeview weird, always fighting against what they see as fake irony or creative laziness.
Which leads to maybe a final thought for you, the listener, to mull over.
Yeah, consider this. This whole source is defined by its own internal critique of, like, endless online recursion and language getting worn out. Is their whole intense quest for something genuine, something unfiltered, is it ultimately just going to fold back on itself and become another layer of self-aware irony?
Or is the sheer depth and passion you see in something like those before and ancestor designs, or that incredibly detailed Mockingbird analysis, is that proof that serious thought, real creativity, it just keeps finding ways to thrive, regardless of how chaotic the container is?
Something to think about, definitely, as you navigate your own corners of the internet.
We'll leave it there. See you next time on The Deep Dive.